The journey of men dealing with female narcissists is different than the journey for women dealing with men. Men are very much invalidated by community, not believed that they're being abused, and it's a complicated process. But I want you guys to hear from my next guest. His name is John McKenney, and he is the founder of MaleVictimsOfFemaleNarcissists.com, as well as Instagram, where we met originally. And he puts out content designed to help the male who is going through this, because he was himself one that went through it. And you're going to hear some crazy stuff that he had to endure, but you're all going to see the hope of him on the other side of it. And that's like my bigger message here. We know what they're doing to you, and it is not fair, but he's going to give us the not fair and the happily ever after, which is post-narc abuse for any of us, right? So let's go meet John. My name is Tracy Malone. I am the founder of NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. I'm a coach internationally, and I'm a SurThriver myself and an author over there. So let's go meet John, and we'll come back at the end and see if you've got some good stuff out of it. Hi, John. Welcome to my show. I'm so excited that you're here.
Thank you so much. So glad to be here. We talked about this a while ago, and I'm really, really excited to be with you today.
Yeah. So before we start, will you just tell everyone what your Instagram handle is? And
Sure.
that's going to be the premise for our whole interview.
Yeah, it's a Male Victims of Female Narcissists, and I'm John McKenney. And what you see there is an exercise in learning the hard way. So,
Yes, and you did learn the hard way.
I
So,
really did.
a horrific divorce, epic it sounds like. Where do we want to start sharing that? It's, I brought you here because male victims of female narcissists are, a good percentage of my clients, and the journey that they have is often very unvalidating. They don't get listened to. They don't get believed. How could you be getting? You're not being abused. You're a man. Stereotype stuff. So share with us what happened.
Well, actually, you mentioned that, and that's really the reason I started my account. So I was married for 27 years and did not realize I was married to a narcissist. I knew something was wrong. I didn't know what it was. I had a lot of the elements kind of down, but I didn't know it had a name. And then I figured it out about 25 years in and kind of started to do my own homework on this. And I couldn't find the materials I needed really to that I felt like I could connect with. So much of the stuff at the time was written by women and kind of against men in some respects. And it was just hard to connect, not that the information was necessarily bad. My journey really did start about 30 years ago. And initially, I really didn't have a clue that what was going on was going on. My ex is really more the covert variety of narcissist. So she kind of flies under the radar with some things and is not it's not so visible. In fact, it's not really visible to the outside world at all, and probably not even so much to my children, I don't think. And it was more of a slow burn than it was something that I was like immediately aware of. What I did know that after about 3 months into our marriage, something changed. And the only way I could kind of pinpoint it was that she was emotionally not present anymore. Like she was just gone. Like Elvis had left the building, and I felt like I was suddenly on my own. She seemed more insecure at the time as well, and we were at least in the early days having kind of more conversations about these things. And by about probably within the first 6 months or so, as I began to address these things, what I first really noticed was this denial engine. It was constantly spinning. We'd happen and she'd pretend it wasn't there. Something would happen and she'd pretend it wasn't there. And ultimately, what takes place in a situation like that is when you're having a conversation with somebody kind of at a normal level, if they don't pay attention to you, the tension raises and it gets more and more difficult to get them to pay attention. And ultimately you have what are called explosion moments where you're yelling, trying to get somebody to listen to you. And that characterized an awful lot of our marriage in the early years, right up through, you know, year 7, 8, 9, and 10, I would think. That was kind of where it started for me. But it was very, very much under the radar more than anything else.
And what you're describing with a covert narc is it's passive aggressive. It's very gaslight style, like you said, you know, just can't do anything right. You know, she says paint the house, you paint the house, but you missed a spot. Right? It's not the fact that everything. It was like knit, right? And so, you know, when you're talking about a 3 month, it started to change. And I write was writing down because I do that when I work with my clients. I'm like, oh, that could either be, you know, something happened, a narc injury, or it could just be that, oh, I've hooked him. I don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I discovered later, and I discovered it in therapy about 15 years later, was that that was the narc injury. So I had had a fight with my father and basically said for time being, I can't deal with you right now. We're going to be estranged for a little bit. And we were for about 3 months. And that was where she was gone. She left the building emotionally. It was just right there. And like you said, I had no experience with marriage. You know, I'd not been married before, so I didn't know how these things go. So I spent all this time trying to please her and to make her happy. And we call that orbiting a lot of times now, where I was just trying to keep her happy. And I've after 7 or 8 years, was just exhausted with that. And it was always, well, if you do this, then I'll be close to you. Well, if you do this, then I'll be close. Well, if you do this, then I'll be close. And the you know, moving the target was always consistently changing. And I could never do anything good enough. I can remember going out to dinner one time and taking her to this show, and then on the other end of it, she goes, why don't you ever take me out anywhere to dinner? This is the next night. And I'm like, well, we just went out to this show. It was real expensive. We had a nice evening and it was just, okay, move it over here. I want another one. And it winds up being exhausting trying to connect with somebody emotionally that just ultimately doesn't want to. So I think about year 7, I realized that the equation didn't work, that didn't matter what I did, that the outcome was going to be a lack of intimacy. And I said so. And I told her that at that point in time, I was done chasing my tail and chasing her whims to go make her happy. And ultimately, I mean, I lived that way, but it really did heat up the marriage for sure.
Mm-hmm. And you have how many children?
4 kids. Yeah. So they're all adults now. They were younger then for sure. And that occupies and a fair amount of time in your marriage and your energy as well. Though I spent an awful lot of time trying to talk to her about how I felt like the best thing you could give to your kids, best gift you could give was a good marriage. That kind of fell on deaf ears. And I personally think they became the focus of her world, probably more gradually over time, but ultimately I would say that they're her supply. Where she's really most emotionally attached to them was kind of them in this circle. And I was kind of out over here, being a victim more than anything else. So that was where we lived for really a good long time.
And I think I remember you saying that you're estranged from almost all of them now.
I am, unfortunately. It's deeply unfortunate. Over the years, and I look back on this now with 2020 hindsight, I think, but ultimately the parental alienation started way earlier than I ever really thought. In fact, when I left, I didn't really know that it would kind of go down this way with my kids at all. I would never have thought that they wouldn't want to communicate with me. One of them, I literally hardly spoken 2 words to since the separation almost 4 years ago. And 2 of the others don't communicate with me either. And I've got friends who, there's no infidelity here. There's no physical abuse. You know, my kids don't have these things to go, well, that's the reason you don't connect. They grew up in a relatively sane home as much as I could make it that. And I have friends who've gone through divorce and far worse situations, and their kids take the time them and connect. And, you know, I wonder some days, and have wondered, you know, well, about me, what happened back there that I'm treated this way and completely estranged from them? And the only real answer to that could be somebody else is speaking badly and has been for decades in their ear, and ultimately have caused the estrangement with my children. So that's very hard. And she also did likewise to my parents. And my parents are also in that same camp. So it's been a painful process for sure.
Yeah, the parental alienation, when I first started in this world, I started in the domestic violence world. I went to a domestic violence caucus every month, and then all my friends were in the domestic violence, and they were strange and all this stuff. And the things we were learning were, if a child is beaten by a parent, they still want that parent. They yearn for that parent. The only time the child doesn't want the other parent is if there's been this poisoning of the parental relation where it's not, like you said, it's not physical. I didn't hit her. I didn't do this.
There's right.
They can say I've done wrong other than the voices in the head.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that even after all this time, and it's been years now since I've been divorced, that they're still relatively in the same place. And what I've tried to do is the same thing I've tried to do to, and I do, by the way, eventually believe they'll come around and figure this out. I think it takes time, at least for the majority of the children. I've heard stories from people and talked to therapists who really do believe that ultimately they come back around, but it takes some time. But I've tried to be the good parent I was before, and made efforts at connecting, and they're all adults now. And if they reject those connections, they're also old enough to be responsible for their own behavior. And at some point in time, I just hope they decide to reconnect. But ultimately the parental alienation, as I look back now, started way earlier than I ever thought. I mean, there are places where I go back to even when the kids were toddlers, where I was, or even infants in some respects, where I was trying to help, you know, let me go do this, or let me go do this. And she wouldn't let me help, you know, that just, I got to do this. I got to do this. And she would never ask. And I would try to, I'd offer help. And I really do believe even that early that at some level, she was kind of preparing them for these moments. And I think it went that way for a long time, even through their childhood, and probably really ramped up some as they became teenagers. And I felt more ostracized and more excluded from my own family at that point in time than any other. I think also the triangulation engine started at that point in time, where a conversation I found would go from me to her to them, and then from them back through her to me instead of directly to me. And I don't think I realized that so much until much later. And then once I was divorced, there was just a moment where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in this thing. And how do I get out, and how do I make it right? And it's very difficult as the parent who's been alienated to vindicate yourself, or my kids and my parents too. I've kind of got parental alienation on both sides. I got my parents who believe this on one side and my children on the other. And there's really no way to explain in a simple conversation, especially if somebody doesn't want to listen. And at this point in time, they really don't want to listen so much. It's very hard to explain and very hard to get somebody to understand your situation, especially when the public persona of my ex was so good with those people.
Yeah. Again, it's all about control.
In
that domestic violence coalition that I was part of, one of my friends had lost all four of her children. She was out on stages. She's talking about parental alienation. She's going to work for the top parental alienation organizations in the country. She is just sucking herself into this. Every month we're going to the domestic violence lessons.
Yeah.
All this stuff. And then her oldest daughter called. And I remember she called me a half an hour after the daughter called. And she was like, she wants to come home. Oh my God. And
it's awesome.
So I made a video with the daughters, because once the daughter came home, the daughter was coming to the domestic violence lessons with us as well.
Awesome.
And so the daughter said, can I make a video and tell people what it was like to be there with Daddy when Mommy would send the presents? And she talked about this on a video, and the video was just discovered by Jada Pinkett Smith's Red Table, and they mother and the daughter to wherever they were, maybe LA, I don't remember, to actually be interviewed because of their
awesome
reconciliation. She still has, as the one who got away, she cannot talk to her sibling still to this in about 5 years. So
yeah, there's an interesting dynamic in that. I think if one connects, the other's kind of, the temptation is to really ostracize that one, right, without question.
The father in that case is actually blocking those children. Just like if your mother sends you a present, throw it out. If your sister calls you, we're going to never talk to her. So again, he's got control over the younger ones. But to hear how it was in their house is so impactful, because that's how they're being brainwashed. Everything you've done is wrong. But while you were going through this as a man, how hard was it? Like, did people believe you when you were trying to explain things?
So there were some who I would call closer friends in my inner circle who I think walked with me for a long enough time, and that I had enough conversation with, that they truly did believe me. Like, after a while, you go, nobody could make all this up. You know, I'm just not that good a liar. Nobody's that good a liar. And if they determine, you know, well, he's not that good a liar, then the only other option is really that it's the truth. Mm-hmm. So I did have and continue to have some people kind of on an inner circle level who really did believe me. And then there were others who were casual friends. My church did not believe me. Actually, they didn't even give me the chance to explain. So it was as much as I was kind of alienated from my parents and alienated from my kids, I wound up also being alienated from my church as well. They requested a meeting for me or with me to have a conversation, or they said a conversation. What they wanted to do was read the Bible to me and tell me that I was in sin, and in the hopes that I would go pick up my husbandly duties again and return. And my response, and by the way, they did this through an email instead of a telephone call or visiting. My office is three miles down the street. I still keep the emails to give a good laugh at every now and then. But I said, if you would reserve judgment and just hear me out, I would appreciate the conversation, essentially. And what I got back was the same email: we want to read the scriptures to you, tell you you're in sin so that you would go back and end it. And I said, well, I'm if that's the situation and you can't listen first, then I respectfully decline the meeting. And I have friends who go to that church who have said that they're telling people that she's a widow now, which I guess means that I'm dead. So,
wow.
So they didn't give me the chance to really even explain, and which is deeply unfortunate. There was no listening to me there. I lost my parents in it. I lost my kids in it. So a lot of my network of support kind of evaporated during that time. I think being a man also specifically, we've had some conversations with other men. I think it's very hard for men to just accept the word abuse or victim. It still doesn't roll off my tongue well. And especially I think at the hands of a woman, you know, we consider that emasculating. And it's very difficult to identify with that. The term I use is more often is kind of undeserved cruelty. Like that makes sense to me more than abuse. But that's really what it was like. It was completely undeserved cruelty, and people were not as apt to listen to me. People were not as apt to believe me, and as they are, I think, with men on the whole. And then if you combine that with a covert narcissist who looks like perfection to the rest of the world, people would look at me and go, oh, well, you're nuts. Mm-hmm. Also on the other side of that, we have what we call a smear campaign. And just like with my kids, this gradual erosion of respect over time, I found other instances where she was doing likewise with, again, my parents and other people, so that when the time came, I think she was ready to go. You know, it's almost like, and maybe you can tell me what you think about this, it's almost like they at some level expect to be abandoned one day anyhow, and are preparing for this the entire time, so that when you leave them, they got all their ducks in a row and everybody leaves you and sides with them without much conversation.
I think we know that narcissists have a fear of abandonment, but they also manifest that abandonment, but they're also preparing for it. As you said, she's out there smearing. She's out there. I'll be good. I'm going to ruin him. I'll be good. Right. And each step of this way from your family to your church. I remember you telling me when we talked a few weeks ago that you were an active like role in the church. You were the children's minister. So like for
youth pastor. Yeah.
For them to like literally abandon the man that worked for them and helped their children without even so much as a word of let's hear both sides first.
Yeah. Let me clarify that. The church we were going to was not one I worked in, but they knew my history in working in the church. So you would figure I would get a little more credibility, but did not. To be honest with you, I didn't get the benefit of the doubt. I didn't get a non-judgmental conversation. I didn't even get a phone call. So it was in large respect, it was lateral destruction of the vestiges of relationship that were just to me and most important to me at the time. It was very difficult.
Well, it's always, they tear down the most important things to you. Your kids, whack. Yep. Your family, whack. Right. Yep. I mean, your church, your family, your neighbors, I'm sure, whack.
Yeah.
Everybody that was in that is important to you, they've got to destroy you because nobody's going to believe their story if they don't completely obliterate you, right? Mm-hmm. It's more believable if, you know, see, the church is against them too, so you should be too. Like, I mean, they've just built it and it just rolls down the hill to, you know, make you into the smear campaign that they have decided upon.
Yeah. And I think the smear campaign, particularly for a covert, we describe passive aggressive behavior. I think ultimately the smear campaign is kind of the ultimate in passive aggressive. You know, it might be, well, he's just far from God right now. You know, he's not connecting with God. How could he leave his family? And it's not left me. It's see, he left our family. It's all about framing this thing up over time. Well, I didn't leave my kids. My kids ultimately, in some respects, have kind of left me. And that's their decision for right now. My parents as well. But I don't think they realize that they were manipulated over this kind of period of time either. It happens so very slowly, and the narrative gets lent, and ultimately when you get into a situation where you leave, they've got all of that painted for you, and there's kind of relational destruction around you.
The description of what you just said is so powerful because it's so true. I mean, and you know, it's I'm so glad that you're here and you're a man, because as you said, the percentages of both of our Instagrams are 80% women and a smaller percent men, but the men are just not believed. And you know, women are frightened by the men, and rightfully so, with the ones that have had the hurt.
Totally.
Right. But at the same time, to understand they are also victims and much more less believed and more beaten up over it. They beat themselves up over it. They like, I should have done something. I tried to fix it. And you can't fix crazy. Right. And so it ends up where men have a different journey. And, you know, what advice do you have for men now that you're on this side? And helping others, you know, what do you foresee in going, hey, you'll be okay? Or what do you want to tell them about?
Yeah. Well, there are people. First is that there are people who will listen to you and who care about you. And just because a particular segment of the population may not listen to you, does not mean there aren't people who will actually believe you. And there were people around me, even, you know, you talk about neighbors, there were neighbors who kind of would come up to me and go, you know, I just didn't ever think anything was right with her. And now I understand. When they find out, they go, it makes sense to me. So if you lived a life of character and you've kind of been a good parent and you've been a good role model and a good friend, that does carry over to people who are genuinely good friends and also have a little imagination. Some of this requires a little imagination for your friends here and there. Because when you start talking about some of the stuff that happened, like my ex pretended that she had skin cancer, people go, "What? Like that happened? People do that?" And I go, "Well, yeah, I had skin cancer on my back. And when I called to tell her, she said, oh, well, I had that." And I go, "Well, you didn't. You had a mole removed on your back and you told me it wasn't cancerous." No, the doctor made a mistake. I'm gonna go call him and tell him that he made a mistake and that I really had cancer and it's the same thing that you had. And it was on, you know, and when you speak these things, it requires either somebody who's kind of been through it before, who's encountered this kind of crazy, or it requires somebody with some imagination or who really knows you and trusts you. So, you know, I encourage anybody who might be in that situation to look for somebody around you who will believe you, and they're present. They really are. They may not be the person you think they are. In fact, I would tell you that some of the people I thought would not stand beside me did, and others I thought unquestionably would stand with me did not. So you may be surprised around you or surprised at who's around you who may really believe you and want to lend some support.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people get very hung up on losing the friends, losing the church friends, losing the neighbors, losing the people. And, you know, this is an unfortunate byproduct of this type of abuse where they have the ones who listen to the poison are the ones that leave. And in the end, as you and I both know, we found out they weren't real friends in the first place, because a real friend would have come to you and gone, "Hey, John, what's going on here? You know, she just said this, you know, tell me what's going on." They would have inquired. The ones that have been fed that slow drip of poison for so long that, you know, it's not far for them to go to believe the whole, you know, book.
Absolutely.
And they've given it all along.
Yeah. And those people, quite honestly, there's a point in time, you know, where you go, "Well, I'd love to have that relationship back." No, I mean, you get to this place, when you get to a place where you kind of leave and you divorce or separate, or, you know, if you're in a boyfriend girlfriend situation where you just kind of step out of the relationship, so people are going to believe what they believe. And there really is, in most situations, nothing you can say to change somebody's mind. And you're better off starting over on a new relationship than you are trying to go resurrect something where somebody's got this negativity and they've got your ex's spin on it, and they're talking in their ear. You can waste a ton of time trying to go get that back, and it's ridiculously impossible to go do in most situations. You're better off kind of running with the people who do believe you and who will stand by you through a hard time. It's way, way better a scenario. And it's starting over again, but ultimately you've just got to go do that to get the support you need to move forward.
Right. It's like cleaning the blackboard. I mean, it's messy, but then when you clean it all off, it's really pretty and you get to start with a fresh slate. But people are frightened by that. You know, it's like, how could my friends leave me? How could my family, my little sister, I was thinking about this last night when I knew your family had done this, my little who was a drug addict and now she's gone, but was talked to by my in-laws during my divorce and recruited as a flying monkey. And I'm like, at that point I was spying on his email. It was in the court. I was admitting, I'm bringing copies of it. I'm not.
Yeah.
But she was convinced and offered to testify against me. And I'm
your own flesh and blood. I know
it was for money. And I'm like, what? But she's like pretending to be my caring sister. And then she's off doing that. So the power that they have to control the people around you will dumbfound you. It will shock you. It will put you in a tailspin of PTSD like you've never seen in your life, from depression, anxiety, you know, actual sickness. It affects our body when everyone around us who we believed was truly friends or family. It's a heart-wrenching situation, but it happens and we can get to the other side, even if we have to go, I'm going to make new friends.
Yeah. you know, I had to keep telling myself, you know, as an active, it's going to be okay. It's going to, because there were days going through it. And for those people who are listening today, who are going through it, it is going to be okay. There is another side to this. There is a place where you feel like you got your sanity back and you're not, your mind is not so manipulated by your ex, and you feel like you're emotionally in a better place. And I, you know, I've kind of made no bones about the fact I was, and for me personally, divorcing was the last thing in the world I wanted to go do. I profess to be a Christian and I don't believe in it. And it took me decades to get to the place where I felt like I could even do that, and still didn't want to do it when I had to go do it. But for me, it wound up being protection. It was, you know, I was just praying for God to take my life. And I was in a bad place emotionally. And it's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't take another day of this. I can't have another conversation. There, nothing works. I've tried absolutely everything I know to do. I put my hand to anything and everything that I thought might bring a positive outcome and to help her and to help our relationship. And I have absolutely nothing to show for it after decades of work. And you feel this hopelessness for what's forward, because you go, okay, well, I if you add time to this, it's not a good outcome. And I don't know personally that I can take one more step. I don't have the emotional energy within me to go do that. And there are men out there I know who have felt this way and feel this way going through it, where they, it's like there's just hopelessness and despairing of life from this. And the narcissist knows just what buttons to push, and they know exactly what they're doing, and they like you weak. And they like you emotionally off balance consistently so that they can control you and your resources and the narrative around you. And it really is a bad place.
It is such a horrible place. You just like flashed me back to a client that I had, and he bought like a 10 pack of sessions. And then I saw him once and he had no idea, or he just heard about narcs and I explained it to him and he was like, oh my God, that explains my whole life. Oh, yes. And then I didn't hear from him for a while. And then I would say it's about 6 weeks later, I get an email from his daughter.
Oh no.
And he had gone and killed himself. He had thought so hopeful, went back to her. She was as wicked. He's like, I can't do it. And he killed himself. And it happens so often. And, you know, we hear the suicide numbers, but these are the reasons.
Like,
these
absolutely.
Right, we just know there's lots of numbers out there, but when someone is just so beaten down,
yeah,
they are just hopeless, as you said. And men more than women, I mean, women do it as well, but the hopelessness that you get is the whole world is against me, and my own kids don't want me, and my family, and like, what, how do I start again from there, right? And so I want to just reverberate to all the men, is there is help out there. There's support groups.
Absolutely.
Are people that get it, and they are there to hear you and validate you. And life after NARC can be amazing. You don't have to go and become a you know, narcissistic coach. You can just go on,
right,
revamp, right, your life and say, all right, I'm ready to start over. And you will get there. And as hard as it will be, it's going to be a better life, because you'll be NARC free. You'll be, you know, all of that gaslighting, all of that, you're not good enough, will suddenly, you'll have to find yourself again, but
yeah,
you will find the person that you were and want to be from this point forward. So don't give up hope.
Totally. And, you know, and I can speak to that, you know, you get to this place where you kind of get out, and there's this very difficult time separating, and whether it's, again, separation or divorce or leaving a relationship. Friend of mine once said, when you kind of end a relationship, it's not like cutting off a tree, like cutting it down where it's just nice and clean, and you got this, you know, left, the tree's kind of cut and severed with something clean, and you got this stump with a clean cut. It's really more like uprooting a tree, where there's all this lateral damage for a season of your life. And on the other side of it, there really is immense peace. To this day, I really don't have a single day where I'm nostalgic for, and quite honestly, I'm a very nostalgic person. I'm not nostalgic for what was. I don't want to go drive by the old house. I really do feel a sense of peace that I've not felt in a really long time. And it's just, I don't have this constant thing going on. It's the water torture. And it really is rather tortuous emotionally. And men, we have a really hard time, I think, expressing our feelings. We have a hard time admitting when we're in pain. We have a hard time saying I'm being abused or I'm being victimized. We have a hard time talking about what goes on in the home. And we may not have this wide circle of friends that we're emotionally connected with to go support us. And there are more people out there than you think that will help you. There are more people out there that will listen. And there are people who will believe you if you really do just kind of open your mouth and risk it a little bit with some folks. I think by and large, you'd be really surprised at the positive outcome.
Yeah. And it's sort of cliche to say there's light at the end of the tunnel, but it's really hard to see that. It's just a teeny tiny speck at the tunnel at the beginning. But as you get more distance and you get more freedom from that pressure, from that noise, from that constant, you can't do something right. Yep. All of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I love peace. I'm like, I know it. And it is just amazing. Yep. And I love being by myself. I was always afraid to be by myself. And now I'm like,
yeah.
It's just, you come to a place of wholeness when you're through the
100%. And along with the abuse, with the lack of conversation comes isolation as well. Mm-hmm. And it's different from being alone or being lonely necessarily. It's kind of an imposed isolation. Mm-hmm. Where I get direct messages on Instagram all the time, Tracy. People go, I didn't realize that anybody else was going through this. I didn't realize that there was a name for this. I didn't realize that other people were talking about this. I didn't realize other men were having the same things going on as me. And I heard your podcast, or I read a meme that you wrote, or somebody directed me to you, And I'm reading this stuff and I can't believe that somebody else is actually saying it. And know, if you're out there, you're just not alone in this. There's a very natural kind of self-imposed, in some respects, isolation on yourself because you're not so much talking about it. You got the narcissist who's trying to isolate you from everybody as well. And you're kind of sitting here by yourself and you're, thinking that I'm the only one in the world who goes through this like this, and you're just not. There are other men that that I'm in touch with. Tracy, some are millions of dollars in debt from the financial abuse their female narcissists or ex-wives have put them through. I know others who have had contracts taken out in their lives where their ex is no joke. And more than one, where their narcissist ex has tried to have them killed or tried to kill them directly. I have moms whose sons are gone. The end result of this abuse is in many ways really just out and out horrific in a way that we don't necessarily understand. Mm-hmm. And it really is important that we address men and talk to them about this so that they can find some help. And obviously I love what you do. And if nothing else, reach out to Tracy and have a conversation, or me, DM me if you want to, if you're a guy and you feel more comfortable with a guy. But this is what she does. And the reason she does it is because people like us are out there who feel like we're alone and feel like nobody will understand. And when the reality is there are some that do, there are some that are experts in helping you. And I've been fortunate enough to have some of those people in my own life. I see a therapist from time to time as well, although it's not as often as it was initially because I'm not in critical mode now. And the point is not to see a therapist for the rest of your life. I continue to connect and I continue to want to stay healthy. And a lot of that conversation, a lot of that healing comes from having somebody who really does understand you. And there are people like Tracy out there who can help you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, John. That's so sweet. Any closing remarks? Where can people find you?
Find me at malevictimsoffemalenarcissists.com. That's our website, and Male Victims of Female Narcissists on Instagram as well. And you can find us there and reach out if you have questions, and we'd be happy to chat. I really do try to respond to all DMs myself personally. So it may take me a minute to get to you from a lot of the people who reach out, but I do get back, and I'm happy to provide some conversation for any guy who has questions or maybe seeing this and goes, I just need to talk to another guy who's been through it. I'd be happy to go do that.
Thank you. That's a wonderful offer. Everyone take him up on it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And he's been there and he's come out the other side. So thank you so
much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Pleasure and an honor to be with you today. Thank you.
You're welcome. Wasn't he great? I just love him. He is such a wealth of information and he speaks from the heart. And as you can see, he has lost his children, lost his family, and everything has fallen apart. And he's making lemonade out of that lemons. And so he is a Sir Thriver as well. And I'm proud to call him my friend. And I hope that for the men that just listen to this, please reach out to him. Go to his website. We'll have the URL below. Besides that, it was below his name. We'll have that there. Go on Instagram and follow him. He's got some great content, and it is designed to help you. And so many of my clients are male, and their journeys are just like his. And there's that hopelessness and the surrender. And as I sadly shared about my client that took his own life, it is the bottom of your life. This is the worst it will be. And so let's get you through this. I'm here if you ever need anyone. You can reach me on my website, narcissistabusesupport.com. Again, my name is Tracy Malone. Thank you so much for listening. If you've liked this, please comment, please share, and please follow me. I always forget to ask that stuff. Have a good day.